It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. The grieving orca mother, as we call her, Tahlequah, has let go of her dead calf. She carried her offspring for at least 17 days across 1,000 miles, picking up viewers worldwide in the process. People called it a tour of grief. They said her dedication and love as a mother knows no bounds. We sure talk about Tahlequah like we can talk about a grieving mother. Is that the right way to show we care about a critically endangered animal? Are we anthropomorphizing? Are we acknowledging an animal's emotion? Joining us, for one, is Mark Beckoff, professor emeritus of ecology and evolutionary biology at University of Colorado, and he's written several books, including The Emotional Lives of Animals. Thanks for coming on, Professor.
You bet. Glad to be here.
Also with us, writer Angela Garbez, whose new book is Like a Mother, on the science and culture of pregnancy. Good to see you again, Angela.
Thanks, Bill. Always nice to be here.
Yeah, and the two of you. I'm glad you both come together on this with us. Professor, even in the way we say that this orca has abandoned her dead calf, let it go, is that the language you would use?
No. She may have let it go voluntarily. I mean, she may have come to some realization that there were other things that she had to do as a wild animal. But she clearly, and so were her pod mates, very closely attached to the corpse, I suppose you could call, her dead baby.
So, is it appropriate to call that grief?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's very clear that across a wide spectrum of animals, they grieve and mourn for the dead. Some people will say, well, we really don't know that. But I think we do. I think there's ample evidence that a wide spectrum of non-humans has or experiences a wide spectrum of emotions. And in an article I wrote for Psychology Today, I noted that if Tahlequah were a dog, it probably wouldn't have made the news. And I think one reason is because we don't see the expressions of orcas or other cetaceans. You know, they don't have tails that wag or don't like dogs or ears or expressive faces or postures or gaits. So I think it's very clear she was grieving, but this doesn't say anything about what her concept of death might be.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that too.
Yeah.
We're talking about death and grief, but also talking about motherhood. And our feelings, our social feelings about motherhood. And Angela, you wrote the book Like a Mother on the Science and Culture of Pregnancy. And I wonder what you think of how we're talking about this fellow animal.
Sure. Well, I completely agree with Mark that you're watching a mother carry her corpse around for 17, her baby's corpse around for 17 days. That's grief. It seems very clear to me, right? On the whale's own terms, that's grief.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm in the middle of book tour and I'm out in different cities talking to different people about their experiences with pregnancy and motherhood. And I feel really privileged that a major part of those conversations is talking about pregnancy loss and infant loss. And, 20 to 25% of known pregnancies, which is different than a calf dying, of course. But we know that pregnancies end and people experience grief. And there's something about seeing this mother with her calf for 17 days that seems to me to speak to the depth of grief that mothers feel. And what I've found as I've been having these conversations with women is that there really isn't a lot of space in our society to have those conversations, and they feel really relieved to be able to have them when we're in a room together. And I think that what's interesting, too, about this moment that we're having watching this orca is that we seem to, at this moment, be able to summon more sympathy in conversation for the grief of a whale, which is very significant. But it seems like at this moment we have more than we do for women in our society who are going through this every day.
Are you suggesting that women don't feel or are not able to express the level of grief that we so welcome from this fellow
yes,
animal?
That's absolutely what I'm saying.
Why do you think that is?
I think because death is difficult to talk about. And maybe it's easier to talk about it in terms of this whale and to her love knows no bounds. But, women who, have babies who are stillborn, people think it's weird if they want to have a picture with that baby, if they want to talk about with that baby, if they want to hold it
mm-hmm.
for hours, for days. And they should be allowed to do that. That's their child that they grew. But we maybe we can start to, maybe this whale, we can learn many things that we could learn from this whale, but maybe we could start to create some space for human mothers as well.
Yeah, what do you think of all that, Mark?
Oh, I think she's right on the mark there. I mean, there's been essays written over the years, and there was one recently written about how people show more concern for a grieving dog than a grieving human woman. You know, they show more concern for grieving or, you know, other non-human animals in pain than they do for people, including children and other cultures who are in pain. So I see Tahlequah's story as having many, many different influences. One would be, of course, on just the study of animal emotions. The other, the study of motherhood. The other, how non-human animals, I always say they wear their emotions on their paws, or in her case, I don't mean it in a joking way, but she was wearing it on her head and her beak, and other podmates were contributing. So to think that she's not feeling anything and she's just doing this, you know, is ridiculous. One thing people don't recognize, because I'm a field biologist, is life in the wild is tough. And so when you've got an animal doing something like that, which could compromise her own well-being, the mother, you know, Tahlequah's well-being, they're doing these things for a reason. And I think that we know enough now about the minds of other animals to know that they're doing it for a reason. And the reason is they're feeling certain emotions.
Mark, in your book, The Emotional Lives of Animals, you wrote, inappropriate anthropomorphism is always a danger, for it is easy to get lazy and presume that the way we see and experience the world must be the only way. It is also easy to become self-serving and hope that because we want or need animals to be happy, they are. What do you think we're doing? This was written before this orca episode, but do you think that's happening with Tahlequah?
No, I don't. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I stand by that if we're going to, quote, anthropomorphize, and I don't even talk about that anymore, to be honest with you, that we need to do it carefully. But that was also written 11 or 12 years ago, before we've had just a lot more data on it. And the reason I included that is because we do have to be careful. But really, the tide has changed. And one of the main questions people are asking themselves now, and more, even well-known skeptics, is not if other animals have emotions, but why have they evolved? So to me, the question is Tahlequah just not behaving as if she is grieving? You know, I call it the as-if disclaimer. Well, these dogs are playing and they're behaving as if they're having fun. I mean, we know rats have fun. We know they like to be tickled. We know that rats, for example, I'm picking on rats only because people sometimes write them off, but yes, they display empathy, they have regrets, they make deals with other rats. So to me, the interesting question about Tahlequah is, why is she performing the behavior she is? Why is she grieving? Why has it evolved, not if it has evolved? And since I wrote that, I've come to the point where I just don't find it even fruitful to talk about whether we're being anthropomorphic. Sometimes people are too loose about it. But really, to me, the interesting question is to learn more about why and how non-human animals express their emotions. And like I said, they do it openly. And unlike, which I just learned listening, you know, to you, they, human women sometimes are encouraged not to speak out about loss.
I mean, I think it's, let's also talk about how orca society is complex, right? Mm-hmm. They have strong bonds, obviously, between mother and calf, but also that orca societies are matrilineal. So I think as long as we're going to look to the orcas and maybe learn something from them, let's talk about matriarchy, right? They live in matrilineal societies where often four generations of whales live together. Yeah. And you know, orcas also, they go through menopause. And instead of pushing away older women the way we do in American society, they invite them in. And these older whales are seen as they're midwives. They often help with the birth of calves. They are navigators and they're teachers. And there's real value. And so I think I agree with Mark. I mean, I think let's just accept that this is grief.
You know, could I just say something?
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more with you. And about 12 or 13 years ago, I was in Samburu in northern Kenya with Ian Douglas Hamilton, who's a very famous elephant researcher. And I got to his elephant camp. I'd never seen a wild elephant, although I've studied wild animals. I got out of his Land Rover, and I could feel something going on. There was a herd of elephants in which all the individuals were moping around. Their tails were down, their ears were down. They would just looked lost. They weren't coherent. And when you said something about matriarchal societies, I mean, there's no better example of a land mammal than, you know, elephants being a matriarchal society. So I just said to Ian, "Hey, Ian, I've never been among wild elephants, but there's something going on here that's wrong." And he said, "Oh, yeah, the highest ranking, you know, the matrilineal elephant passed away recently. And just a kilometer or two away, there was another group of elephants where some were playing and some were resting and some were eating." And you're right about that, that, you know, these other animals, other females, partake in the entire, if you will, gestation and birthing process. And part of the birthing process, of course, is what happens right after postpartum.
Yeah. Yes.
So, I really appreciate your saying that, because when I see these pictures, they're mind blowers. So some people, but a very few now, really, things have changed, would say, "Oh, you're just being anthropomorphic. You know, those elephants weren't feeling anything." Well, yeah, they were feeling anything. And one of the things, as a field biologist, that we look for is changes in behavior. So if you see these animals go from being happy-go-lucky and spending time interacting with one another in one way, and then all of a sudden they're not eating and they're moping around and there's no cohesion to the group, or they're all focusing on, say, what Tahlequah is doing, they're feeling something.
Mm-hmm. We just have a minute left here, so I'm curious, a quick take on what you realistically hope we take away from the story of Tahlequah. Angela?
Well, as I said before, I think as humans, we're just very bad talking about grief and talking about difficult things. And we are also very bad at supporting women. And so I think, you know, I actually think it's wonderful that all this attention can be paid and that we can see this grief in action. And it speaks to what our own emotions can be. I'm not equating them, but I think, what if we could create more room for that and sort of transfer that emotion and that compassion that we have for this whale, if we could transfer that to humans. Yeah. And I mean, one other thing I would like to say too is, it's great that we have this sympathy for and compassion for the whale, but really it's a little bit misplaced, because we know what caused the death of this calf.
Yeah.
The calf was undernourished, and that's because there's an undersupply of food. And so these animals are really threatened. It's an environmental thing. This is not like pregnancy loss, which can't be prevented. We could direct our attention to environmental issues that could actually help these whales.
I hear you agreeing, Professor. We are right at the end of our time. I've loved talking to you. We haven't met before. I hope we can talk again. Will we come on the show again, Professor Mark Beckoff?
Oh, I'd be pleased to, and I echo what Angela said. It brings attention to endangered species who suffer deeply at the hands of humans.
Professor Emeritus of Ecology, Evolutionary Biology, University of Colorado. The book is The Emotional Lives of Animals. Thank you, Professor. And Angela Garbez, I know you, and I always love talking to you. So please come back. Her new book is Like a Mother. And we'll be right back with The Record.